Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What's the state of South Dakota's rivers and waterways? An investigative series from South Dakota News Watch says river quality is at risk. Bart Fancook has spent nearly 30 years as a reporter and editor, a former editor for the Rapid City Journal. He is now an investigative reporter for South Dakota News Watch, and he joins us on the phone now from Rapid City. Bart, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Lori, and thanks for having me. I sure appreciate it.
A quick overview of what South Dakota News Watch is. For listeners, we haven't talked about it since Randall Beck and Jack Marsh came and shared news of it on the program.
Yes, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, independent public service journalism group. We do stories of statewide interest, publish those on our website, and then those are free for all media in South Dakota or ostensibly anywhere to use at no cost. And we're founded, as you mentioned, by all former newspaper journalists and some of the best people I've ever had the opportunity to work with.
Give me an idea of what some of the early response has been from readers and journalists across the state.
Well, we have had good response by the traditional media. The Rivers package in particular has run one portion of it or in some cases all of it in all of the daily newspapers that I know of in South Dakota. I also do a broadcast version that's run on a number of radio stations. But, you know, what I'm finding as a reporter is that there's a lot of issues that, given the current state of newspapers, I think they still do a great job, and I'll be a newspaper man until I die. But there just wasn't the opportunity to drill into things. And so when I started looking into the rivers situation, for example, there were a lot of untapped reservoirs, no pun intended, but of information out there. Looking at reports and inspections, there's just a lot of things in South Dakota that have gone unchecked. And I think that's a niche that South Dakota News Watch can and is filling. So it's going well. We've been on the front page of a lot of papers in the last couple of weeks.
And you can find the entire series online at sdnewswatch.org or subscribe to your local newspaper, of course. Give me an idea, Bart, of the origins of this investigation. What there was a lot to get your arms around, for one thing. How did it all get started?
You know, it was kind of like these things often do kick off. It was newspaper day at the Capitol and Pier, and we did Randall and Jack did a short presentation about Newswatch, and then Governor Dugard did sort of a farewell speech to the press. And someone asked him, what are the laments that you have during your time in office? And he mentioned almost offhandedly that he wishes he could have done more for South Dakota rivers because he felt like they weren't of the quality they could be, and that there was pollution and they were dirty, and he didn't feel good about the way he left the rivers. And that was something I think that stuck with the group. I also have covered river issues in the past in my career down in Florida. And so I have an interest in that. And I think also it's something that, you want to take a lot of pride in your rivers as a state, and most major cities in South Dakota are built along rivers. And so it was just an area where we wanted to see what was going on. I did a little preliminary research and found that, three quarters of our rivers are considered in the last survey. It's a biannual survey, are considered impaired by the federal government due to some form of pollution. And so I think taking a couple of sort of pieces of news like that and putting those together, we decided that this was something we wanted to take a closer look at. And it turned out that you're right, there was a lot to look at. And I think that we came up with some important findings that I hope will drive discussions among residents, elected officials, and appointed officials across the state to be aware and maybe start improving things.
State inspections have fallen by nearly half. Say more about that. Inspections of what? Are we talking industry, of rivers themselves, and who's responsible for it?
The inspections that have fallen by half, that's in the State Department of Environment and Natural Resources. And that number was 158 inspections done in 2013. And in 2017, that was down to, like you say, half of that, so 80 inspections. And they go in and they can do an administrative review where they stay in pier and look at all the data that's been reported from either a municipality or an industrial discharger. They have to have a permit and a statement of basis that lays out how their system works and how much water and materials are moving through, and then what are they putting out at the end and where are they putting it. And so those inspections fell because the permits, the cost of permits in South Dakota hadn't gone up in 25 years. So I think all of us know how the cost of living has gone up during that time period. And meanwhile, we've had a cutback in federal funds, and federal support for the program. About half of it is federal and half of it is here locally or within the state. And so one thing I found for sure was that also, Lori, they do then on-site inspections. They go and actually meet with the superintendent of the facility and look at all the processes. And, you know, the inspections work. I can say that from the research that they clearly have an impact. There were times where an inspector would go to a municipality and they would have one of them, they had a lift station where they changed the elevation of the material so it flows. And it was just leaking and no one knew about it. All the alarms had burnt out and they didn't know anything that it was even happening until that inspection occurred. And then there's evidence that inspections of industry do play a role. There was the Valley Queen cheese plant in Milbank had more than 1,000 violations in the early aughts. And the state inspections led to, I don't want to say a crackdown, but they started to put a lot of pressure on them. And that company spent $6.5 million over the next several years to upgrade their facilities. They've had a relatively clean record since. So that lack of inspections is an issue. The other issue that gets some attention is the fact that the permits that these companies and cities operate under, they're called administratively continued, and that means that nothing's been updated in some cases for up to 20 years. And in particular, the two, I think, most glaring examples are the City of Sioux Falls and the Smithfield Foods plant, both major dischargers into the Big Sioux River. The city, about 17 million gallons per day, and Smithfield, about 2.5 million gallons. And they're operating under permits that were approved in 2005. That's not good for keeping up with standards and limits on what can be reduced. And also the population of Sioux Falls has grown by about 20% since then. So those are some issues that the state has added some people this year. And the legislature did pass a bill to raise the permit fees and generate some new funds.
City of Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken, who was recently elected and proposed the city's largest budget in history, was on the program just the other day, and wastewater treatment upgrades were key to that budget and was something that was a top priority for the city. Lots of money needs to be invested. Talk a little bit about the expense, because this series covers what corporations need to do, what municipalities are responsible for, but also individual farmers and individuals living in an urban area to try to reduce urban runoff. The entire thing is expensive. Talk a little bit about the cost of upgrading as new technology and new knowledge comes forth about what can be done and what has to be done.
Yeah, I think there's a separation there in that there's really two sources of pollution. Point sources, which is materials that come out of a pipe. Those would be your industry and municipal polluters. And then non-point sources, and that's really agricultural and urban runoff. Those last two are there's very limited regulation. And I can talk about that more, but you asked about what it's going to cost to catch up, because if there's a four-part problem, one of the big problems, we're not a heavily regulated state, and that has reduced some of the influence of the state to make things cleaner. But the other is that we have had continuous growth and very old systems. Rapid City's looking at a $26 million upgrade. I know the numbers are much bigger in Sioux Falls. The state need is listed at $161 million. The national, the EPA says $27.1 billion in upgrades are needed to bring the point source polluters up to modernize them. So when they modernize a plant, there are success stories out there. And in fact, I'm going to report on one story I'm writing today, and it'll post tomorrow, about the city of Del Rapids. They were under a state order. They had a lot of ammonia releases. They got a grant and a loan, $5 million, and they built a whole new system. Now, who's going to pay for that? Taxpayers on the federal level, of course, are paying for some of that through their federal money, but also the users are going to pay. Their monthly water bills, or sewer bills, rather, are going to go up extensively by about 25%. So that is something that, you know, it's difficult to do. It's time consuming. But when you do upgrade, for example, you bring in the presence of UV systems, ultraviolet light, that removes microbes from the bacteria from the water without the use of chlorine. Because when you use chlorine, like older systems, including Sioux Falls, then you have to use a chemical to counteract the chlorine before the water is released. So you can see there, you've gone from one process of using lamps to instead of the old process where you used chemicals and then another chemical to counteract that chemical. So it's going to take a lot of money. It was interesting to me that the city manager in Del Rapids, who is a user of waterways, he told me the city probably wouldn't have upgraded if the state hadn't put them on in order to do so. Hmm. So it is expensive. He's protective of his residents. I understand that. But it is it's a million-dollar problem anywhere you turn. And yet, if we want to move away from the things that I reported about all the chemicals, nutrients, bacteria in the water, that's where we're going to have to head. And so that's also the longer you wait, that's another part of the four-prong problem, is the long-term loading of chemicals and pollutants in our rivers. And think about 19 billion gallons of material, water, and pollutants flowing into our rivers every year. That's a lot, and that happens every year. So they got to get ahead of it, and the sooner you do it, the cheaper it's going to be.
Let's talk a little bit about that impact as, you know, regular South Dakotans will see it, which is you interviewed one resident of Rapid City who said, I guess it's just not a river that you can have any kind of recreation in. She rides a, you know, kayak down the river and then takes a shower.
Yeah, I must say, as a reporter, I try not to get emotionally attached to the topic or have emotional responses, but I was very saddened by that. Because the river is very pretty there. I've spent a lot of time fishing on Rapid Creek, and you hate to think. I think that's one of the maybe not shocking, but startling things when people learn about how every river in the state, almost every single waterway, takes on pollution. Even south of Hill City, Spring Creek, that when you see that babbling along there and all those tourist places and as it leads to Sheridan Lake, you know, it takes 250,000 gallons of wastewater a day. So that was a sad moment for me, but that was about sort of the outcomes of the plant. But what's going in the water is I think more dangerous particularly the study from Mines that found that Shiga toxin, E. coli in the Big Sioux and Rapid Creek. That to me was one of the real worrisome elements of the package.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. My guest is Bart Fancook from South Dakota News Watch. You can read the multi-article series. You can read the series at sdnewswatch.org, talking about rivers at risk. And let's talk a little bit, Bart, about ag waste and urban runoff, because now you're talking a slightly different source problem and different challenges.
And that's actually the big thing about the non-point source pollution is that in 1972, the Clean Water Act was passed all about point sources. And that was great because America was dumping just literally tons of pollutants, including in South Dakota, directly into rivers. I mean, much of it was untreated or very lightly treated. So that was a big crackdown by the federal government, and the states responded. But that didn't include any non-point source pollution. And so agriculture and urban runoff were essentially given a pass. And I think we can see, you know, you drive around East River and you see all the farms and all the animals there. I mean, they are producing waste, and there is no clean runoff from a farm. Now, there are ways to improve that. They've taken a voluntary and incentivized approach. And one of the things I'm writing about today is that's not really working. I mean, it's working for some. There are farmers who care deeply about the land, and I met with some of them. But there are some where it's expensive. They're running on a thin bottom line. My mother and father did it one way. My grandmother and grandpa did it that way. I'm going to do it that way. Those attitudes are hard to break. But that loading of E. coli and that E. coli in the rivers is, I think, the most dangerous portion of the whole problem. Because if you look back, we saw In 2011 in Germany, 53 people died of the Shiga toxigenic E. coli. Then we had the romaine outbreak here in the U.S. that killed five and sickened people, including in South Dakota. And then now there's 500 people who are sickened after eating salads at McDonald's, and including in some in South Dakota. So the E. coli that's making it into the rivers from agricultural producers is a real and longstanding issue. I will tell you that part of my story for this week is I looked at a move in Minnesota where they passed a fairly rare regulatory program that mandates the use of buffer strips. And buffer strips, Laura, you probably know about these, but they're 50 foot or wider grassy areas that simply slow the flow of the water into the river from a farm. And along the way, Mother Nature is allowed to do more of her work to hold that water on the land longer, which cleans it, and also slow its flow into the river so there's more nutrients that are able to filter out of it.
And Bart, we're going to run a little bit short of time here, but you mentioned in the piece as well that buffer strips also take land out of production. And in a year when it's particularly tough for farmers, that's a hard call to make right now. It can get put forward to another year as a problem to solve. Lots more to talk about, but that's our time. So, Bart, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
You can find more on Rivers at Risk at sdnewswatch.org.